We're starting at the top of Samach Chet Amud Aleph, about four lines down. So, Amar Vashi, Amar Luisave de Matamachsiu. The elders of Matamachsiu told me that Stam Mashkanta Shato, that a regular Mashkon is for a year, or a minimum of a year. My Nafkamino, what does that make a difference? I mean, we've already discussed that there are two types of Mashkonim, which is one Mashkon which relates to a city, the Misalke, really where you have to prepay and you can pull your mashkon wherever you pay back the loan. And now we're the loan salker. And then we have a city where they do not allow you to repay it, and it stays with a fixed time with the creditor. So why does it make a difference, this minimum of a year? So Mara says, the e'ochle shata matzi misalikle. So that it's actually the minimum amount of time that the mashkon has to reside in the hands of the creditor, even in a city where they are misalke, where they allow you to prepay the loan. There's a an inability to prepay for the first year. There's a minimum of a year that the creditor is there. After that point in time, you can buy him out. You can take your loan, repay the loan, and take your land back. But it means there is a minimum of a year. Below, lo matz b'salakle. And if it's not waited out that first year, then he can't take it out. So, it's called call protection. Right? He has call protection for the first year. And then, after that, he has the ability to buy it back. From our value. Ravashi says, in addition to this, the elders of Matamachsia told me, my mashkanta. What is the word mashkanta mean? Why is it called the mashkon? The shchuna gabe. Alright, that he is his neighbor. So what does that mean? My nafkamino. What does it make a difference? It's the dina de bar metzra. The dina de bar metzra, which is, right, when, or basically a first right of refusal by a neighboring property. So a person goes to sell a property, and he has someone who is adjacent to his property. The dear de bar mitzvah is that that person has a first right of refusal. If they can match the purchase price from any other individual, then they're given the right to buy it because they have the most advantage in terms of having two pieces of land be adjacent. If they're going to work the land, it's much easier, or if they're going to build something, it's much easier if the land is adjacent rather than scattered over the place. So the din of the bar mitzvah is that we demand of you to at least offer the people around you, adjacent to your property, if you're selling, to have that right of refusal. What does that mean? So the Sabi of Matamachsi said that a person who's holding the mashkon, right, is there's no one closer to him than him. He becomes the most adjacent property to the right to this seller, and therefore he gets a right, right, to buy it. He gets the first right to buy it and the first right of refusal. In both instances, he's the closest neighbor now. Right, so that's why it's called a mashkon or shkuna.
The malveh is able to sell it while it's being held by the malveh as a mashkon.
But only, right, then he'd have to repay it. I mean, the cash that he comes into, he'd have to use as to repay the loan. So Amar Rava. Now Rava has a concluding statement to a number of the sugyot that we saw. First of all, leit hilchata lo ki tarshei popanai. The locha is not like the tarshei of Rav Papa. Now we saw the tarshei of Rav Papa, right, that we saw earlier, was which he then, by the wine, or he actually had shechar sell tamarim, right? The date beer that he used to say, oh, that's not a problem of rebeat, even though I'm selling it today forward at the higher price because I am rich, I don't need the money. And number two is my beer won't go bad, so I can keep it for no problem in my possession. And the Gemara rejected that because, right, the possibility of way better if you look at it from the other person's perspective. From the buyer's perspective, he doesn't look like that. He doesn't have the money, and that's why he's buying it forward. Otherwise, if he had cash, he would, of course, pay you at today's price, right, and not at the future higher price. So what he says, Allah is not like Rav Papa, and that is classified as a fak repeat, and you can't do the tarshay of Rav Papa. Below b'shtarim mechozonai, not just like the shtarim of mechozonai, below kechakirei narshay. So what is this? I'm going to go through each one of them. But the shay popanai, tarshay popanai is ketarshay to Rav Papa, so that's what we just explained, right, this sale of Rav Papa. Now, what is Shtar Machozunai? The Zakfle, the Ravcha, Karno. They place the Revach on the Karen, Bekatvi Le Bishtar, and then they write it into the Shtar itself. And then it says, Meyemer Dava Ravcha. So, what's the case here? The case here is that they decide to go into business together. So, the guy goes into business together, and he gives him Pragmatia. He says he takes certain merchandise to go sell and to make profits on the merchandise. So, the Balabite has merchandise. He says here to the salesman, you take the merchandise and you go sell it. Now, when you come back, you have to repay me the principal, you have to repay me the keren, the object that I'm giving you. Plus, you have to give me half of the profit. I get 50% of the profit and you keep the other 50% of the profit. So you're getting compensated for the other, for what you're doing with the profit, with shares, sharing in the profit. The problem is what they used to do was they used to assess in these mechozunai shtarot, what did they do? Up front, they would assess what the anticipated profit would be. Let us assume you're going to make 20% profit on this. In the contract, they then wrote that you owe me 110%. They used to write in the Karen, the original object that he took, plus the anticipated 50% of the profit. So that became, he had to pay back this individual. Say he took a pragmatio of 100 shekel with the anticipation of 20 shekel of profit. So then when they wrote the contract, they wrote, you took from me 110 shekel. So now what are we doing? We're obligating the salesperson, the person taking it, 110 shekel, no matter whether there's profit or no profit. Meaning that you're now forcing him to pay, even though there's a possibility or a distinct possibility that he won't realize that profit. So what's that called? So that's called ribit, right? Meaning that you're forcing him to pay 110% of the value because he's basically borrowing money from you. He's taking pragmatia to sell out in the field or in the shuk, wherever he goes to sell it, and you're getting that back no matter what. Amarle Marbar Amemar the Ravashi. So he says, Marbar Amemar says to Ravashi, Abba Ovid Hochi. My father used to do exactly this. So, meaning that's Marbar Amemar. So it's a Amemar's son saying about a Amemar, my father did this. So when they came to him, he trusted them. So he says, Tina right, that's okay if he's still around. Ishochib, when he passes away, and the star then comes to the Yitomim, so what would happen then? So what's the story? Here you have a Meimar who is right, writing these contracts, but he trusts the salespeople to go out to come back and tell them what the true profit was. And he would only charge them, or only give them, or take, really, out of that, the percentage that he was owed, and not force them to pay the excess amount, even though it was written into the contract. Nevertheless, he would not demand, say they wrote into the contract 110%, he would not demand that 110%, Elaim came, the seller came back and said, I sold it for 20% profit. If he came back and said, I only made 5% profit, he would only take the 2.5%. So now, Amemar is basically creating the situation where he's sharing, right, in the profits, and not demanding or guaranteeing himself a profit here. So Rashi says, that's okay when Amemar is around. Problem is that the contract's written without any mention of this, agreement, that he would believe the sellers to come back. Right, so all of a sudden he passes away. He passes away, and then Marbar Meimar comes and says, listen, I have this contract, you owe me this 110 shekel. So he says, what do you mean? Your father trusts me. He says, I don't see anything like that in the contract. And then he's going to go collect 110 shekel. So Rashi says that even though your father, it's okay what your father's doing, but the fact that the contracts are written this way is going to cause problems when he passes away. Right, it was like the mistake that dropped the word that came out of the leader. We had this many times, which is that when you said something, right, it's so powerful, it's as if it happened. And Amemar passed away. And that here he was going to Marbe Amemar, and he had said, If he passes away, and the stomach comes, and that's what happened exactly. He passed away, and the shtarot fell to Marbar Meimar. Now, Chakirei Narshai, what's the Chakirei Narshai that we say the loch is not like? They wrote like this. Mashkin Leplanya, Are Leplanya. The creditor has taken from the debtor a piece of property as a mashkon. Bahadar, and then he goes back, and Chachramine. Then he allows the debtor to be chokered from him. So now, what is choker? As opposed to a sharecropper, who shares in a percentage of the output of the field, right? A chokir, the one who's choker the field, pays a fixed amount of money per year. Fixed amount of money or fixed amount of produce, no matter what the field produces. So irrespective of what the field produces, this individual is going to pay a fixed amount. So now what you have is, the debtor is giving over to the creditor a piece of property. The creditor turns back with the piece of property and then gives it back to the debtor to work at a fixed rate per year. So what's the problem with this? Eimat kana de akne nihale. Since when is this property his, right, where that he can make such a deal with the right debtor? The truth is, the reason that he's making it with the debtor is because he has it as a mashkon. Now that he has it as a mashkon, he's making it with him, he's making it pay a fixed price. What's the possibility? The possibility is that the field does not produce that amount. It produces below that amount, it produces zero. And now what happens? The debtor is now paying him ribit, basically, interest on the property. Because the property is not enough in his possession, right, for him to go back and turn back and rent it out. Now, is it not his possession because it's a bak ribit, and therefore he can't go ahead and set up a situation like this? Because taking of the peirot from the field or the produce of the field is really a bak ribit. Now he goes around and or you could say he just doesn't have, even when we say the Rabbi Yitzchak, he doesn't have enough ownership over here to create other transactions with it. Nevertheless, he sets up a situation where now the debtor is working the field on behalf of the creditor, giving him cash back, or giving him produce back, and giving him produce back, he's giving him a fixed amount of produce back. So there's almost definitely ribit coming out over here, because the field could produce less than that, right? Or the fact that he's taking anything from this field, or any amount from the debtor, indicates that he really owns the mishkon, which isn't the case yet. The debtor hasn't defaulted on the loan, so why is the field really his, where he can make determinations about the output of the property?
Can you rent it out to another party?
No, that's right. I mean, it sounds like maybe not. Right.
For that, for the limited term.
But it depends whether this is the art of Salka or the low Salka, right? You have to know what the exact agreement is over here. Right. So if it's an art of low Salka, then maybe he could rent it out for that period of time. Then he does own the payroll for the 3 years. It's not a problem.
Or even based on today, for this minimum of a year, he applies
to the right. Then he can have it worked. He could take the roots. Right, for that year, assuming that he's entitled to the fruits for that year, depending if it's been a chayta, yet there's all other qualifications.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's got.
The vayidna, so then they changed the way they wrote the contracts. The katkatvi hafi, they changed the way they wrote the contracts. Read, kinyana mine vishahina. Right, I would say I take a kinyan from him. Vishahina kama. Right, say so I would stay there for a number of years. Kama yidne v'hadar chakra, and then they gave it out. They gave it not as a sharecropper, but as a fixed payment per year. In order that the loan market would not close down, they created this contract. What did they say? They basically said for the first number of years, let's say the first 3 years, it was classified as being right, in possession of the creditor. And he wouldn't set up this contract with him and the debtor. After 3 years, where he's already been in the property for a duration of time, then he would go up and set up this contract with the debtor. So now, at this point, it already looks like, since he's stayed with the property for a number of years already, 3 years, so what's the difference if he continues to work the field, or he uses the field, or he's chokir of the field to the debtor? That, Mar says, well, we let that happen, because so we would not close down the loan market, we allowed this to happen. Mar says, it's still not permitted, it's still a problematic. Why? Because even if you wait to start charging him interest, it's still interest, right? Just because you wait, right, doesn't help this situation, right? Delaying the collection of interest doesn't make it not interest anymore, right? You still don't own the property, right? And there's no safek o sev ochel. There's no safek. Again, if you open up a safek, if you open up the ability that, right, you may not get anything, then already it's not a problem, right? Because there's sometimes you'll get, sometimes you won't get. As a sharecropper, then he takes the risk with the property. As long as he's doing binachaita, then he's doing it with a reduction of the principal, and he takes the risk. We said, as long as there's no guaranteed upside, then he's fine, as long as he is doing binachaita, either binachaita or with giving him the full value of the deduction. But here, even if he gives him binachaita, he's getting a guaranteed payment. On a guaranteed payment, that is automatically upside. And I'm assuming that the chakira is in excess of the nechaita, obviously, that the case. And therefore, we don't allow him to do it, even in the case where he says, oh, I'll wait 3 years to do it. Because waiting doesn't make the property any more his, then, right, unless there's a specific time where he defaults on the loan, then the property becomes his. And then he's no longer talking about a mashkon anymore. It's now his property. We took it as pure own for the loan. Right now. New Mishnah, which is now we're going to move something close to Heter Iska. But it doesn't work exactly, because you're not allowed to sit down a storekeeper. Basically, you have a store. You want someone to mind the store for you. And in minding the store, you say you get half the profits of whatever sold in the store. That you can't do. You can't give someone right payrot, fruits, to go out and sell in the market for half of the reward. Ela im kein noten lo skaro kipoel. Unless you pay him to do the work that he's doing in order to get the profits. So what's the problem here? The problem is that when you set up such a transaction, the way the Gemara views it, who sets up this transaction, we are basically becoming joint owners in this object, like the payroll, or joint owners in the store. When we become joint owners in the store, right, that means that there is upside and downside, but upside and downside to both parties. Look in the Rashi. It's good. It's right across from the Gilyon HaShas. Right across from the Rashi and the Gilyon HaShas. Stam hamikabel pragmati lemachatzit sechar mikabel levachrayut. So that's stam. That would answer your question. That's a normal case. And whenever you take pragmatia, then you also take the responsibility. Chatzia karen ba'onsin zola. You take responsibility for 50% of the losses here. Therefore, hilkach ha'ipalga came into b'chay ba'onsin milvehu its loan. It becomes like a loan to him. Because that means in day one, they basically come and assess the value of the principal that you handed to him. When you assess the value of the principal to him, then you're basically saying to him, I am lending you such and such money, because you are now responsible for that money. Now, Vada Vadino Lito Chatzischar. And he also gets 50% of the profit. Nimtza, Mitasik Bechetziosho Balabait, Shui Pikadon Itzlo. And he's working with the pikadon of the balabayit, which is a pikadon b'schar amtanat ma'ot hamilveh l'fikach asur. So what's the problem here? We have now two pieces of the store. Let's call it 50% of the store and the other 50% of the store. 50% of the store remains in the hands of the balabayit, both for upside and downside. It's all the balabayit's responsibility. Chen Bani, who is now going to work the store, is going to mind the store. He has responsibility for the other 50%. Now, did he pay anything for that 50%?
No.
Does he really own that 50%? No. What is it, basically? We're creating a loan, right? The owner of the store is lending him the other 50%. And we assess the value at day one. We say, what is that 50% worth? Now, when you come back, you're going to give me that. You're going to give me back exactly that 50%. Now, you're entitled to schar. You're entitled to the upside on that property. But I'm entitled to the 50% upside on my side of the property. Now, does he pay him for his work? The answer is no, that he doesn't pay him for his work. So the problem now becomes, which is that, fine, for the 50% you lent him, that he works for himself. It's his own now. We've assessed that it becomes him. You lent him money. If you lend somebody money and they go out and invest that money, right, they could keep all the profits from that money. So that's fine, that he gets his 50% schar there. If he gets less, that's fine. Problem is that on my 50%, the owner's 50%, when it goes up in great value now, and right, he is getting the benefit of that, how is he compensating the individual for working and getting that upside? Where is there any compensation for what he's doing?
What does there need to be?
Right, well, but you don't usually work for someone for free. Alright, so now that he's not working for free, what's the problem? The truth is, you are getting compensated for it. Why are you getting what are you compensating him for? Right? You should really pay the storekeeper for making you the profit. That's what you do anyway. If I invest with someone, I have to compensate them for getting me the investment returns. So now over here, does he compensate him? No. Why is he waiving his fee? Why is this storekeeper waiving his fee? I'll tell you why he's waiving his fee. Because you lent him the other 50%. So he's basically saying, listen, man, I did you a favor. I lent you money. So I'm not going to pay you because my payment is in the fact that I lent you the money. So that's basically effective interest, right? It's an imputed interest. His salary, which you are waiving, is basically the interest on the loan for the 50% that the storekeeper keeps. So that is interest. So we don't allow you to do this because you are not compensating. Elohim Cain, that's what the Mishnah says. Notain los charo kipoel. Unless you compensate him. Now, if you compensate him, there's no problem anymore. If you pay him for the work as storekeeper, now we have two parts. Your part, which you paid him for as the storekeeper, you compensated him to be the storekeeper, and his half, which he borrowed from you, and now that he borrowed, he can do whatever he wants with that money. That upside or downside is his. Then the loan is separate from the pikadon, because you compensate him for what he does, or the profits that he brings you in the pikadon side. Then the loan is separate. When we don't compensate him for the pikadon side, then you're enjoining the two pieces and saying, basically, the compensation for... Right, the pikadon is being waived because I lent you money, and that's basically effective interest or imputed interest on the loan side of the 50%.
You had a case in the Gemara though a few lines ago about the 110% and the one out of the 100, like getting a 10% out of the 20%.
Right.
And we said that you can't do that to start with. You can't write in the star and give back 100%. But that means that you could split the profits on the squirrel.
Right.
Isn't the mission talking about the same case and saying that you can't do that?
Well, it depends if they took, again, it depends that case, which is not clear over there, the Gemara doesn't say, did they take downside? The whole question will be whether they take downside risk. If they do not, like for instance, if in the case of a Maymar, he gave them the produce to sell, and he says, we'll split the profits on the upside, but you have no downside, right, in the profits, then there's no loan anymore. Then it's really Rav, his merchandise that is doing the work, and he's paying them in the end with the scar, which you're allowed to do. The problem in our case in the Mishnah, which Rav describes, is the fact that they have downside, that they actually have exposure to the downside in the parent.
He wants to give a very small scar that, like a few couple of...
All right, so that the Gemara will discuss. Very good. That's exactly what the Gemara is going to discuss. What is the scar that he has to give him in order to eliminate this problem? Now, en moshivim tarnegolim lemechza. Same problem here. You can't take, for instance, eggs, where you say, listen, I will have my tarnegolet, I'll have my chicken sit on your eggs for you, and then we'll split the outcome of the eggs. The same problem that we had before, because... Right, in this sense, he has to return the eggs, and they assess. He takes 50% of the, he takes the upside, but he also takes the downside. The same thing, you can't take young calves, right, and donkeys to bring them up for the half profit. And in both these instances, you have to give him the, you have to pay him, compensate him the salary for his efforts, plus the mizonot, the food that he has to outlay to feed the animals in order to bring them up to that point. So basically, you have to take away all expenses and right salaries. If you eliminate that, then we can do this because then it comes a true partnership in terms of the upside. That means that we're both putting in 50% of our money, and then the upside we can split. As long as you're compensating me for my efforts in the interim.
Even though the downside, he's lending him the money for that?
Well, he's lending the money and exposing him to the downside. Right, because when he lends the money...
It's a real partnership.
Right. He's exposed to the, right, even though the money, right, it's a real partnership, but the way I'm getting the money from my half of the partnership is that you're lending me the money. So now if you had a true partnership, say both parties showed up at the table, and they each put in 100, right, into the pot, what would you normally do in that case? If you have two partners, you have a silent partner and an active partner, how does it work? When you have a silent partner and an active partner, we don't just say, okay, the active partner works and no problem. No, what we say is that the active partner takes a salary out of the partnership, and then whatever is beyond the salary, the two partners split. But what's happening in all these instances is that you're waiving the salary. The waiving the salary is only happening because we didn't both put in the money, but you put in all the money, and you lent me my half. And why am I waiving my salary is because you lent me the money. So that's why it's considered effective interest. Aval, mekabelin agalinu seyachin demechsel, magalinu tan adshiyu mishulashin, v'chamor adshihei tohenet. What you are allowed to do is to take these agalim and the mechsa umagalim otan, and you bring them up, ashiyu mishulashim, and then you bring them up until they are, right, up to one third of their growth, I don't know, shlish shor, shlish sus, and then they split it. And that is allowed, right, and then we have to look. Over here, the basic issue is that they didn't assess it up front. They didn't quantify what the animals are worth at the time that he takes them in. If you don't quantify them at the time that he takes them in, then you're not exposed to the downside. I mean, this becomes a true partnership, which is that your salary is basically buying you the ability to get the scar in the back half. You're investing your salary to get the scar, to get the upside back, versus here where you're not exposed to the downside then. You're not taking on the downside exposure. Right now, Tana, there's some girsa issues here. But the way our Gemara reads it is Kapoel Batel. When it says that until this Chor Kapoel means Ketana Kapoel Batel. So that is the Mishnah doesn't write Poel Batel, but rather Gemara says you should say that when it means Poel Batel. Tosus in the hand has another Girsa over here that the Mishnah actually was Gores Poel Batel inside of it. Right, just to note that there's going to be a Machukas Rashi Tosus to explain the next piece of the Gemara. Now, my Kapoel Batel, what does it mean, Kapoel Batel? So I'm Rabbi, Kapoel Batel Shol Tomach Machad Batel Mina. He gets paid or compensated like a Poel Batel from the Machad that he would otherwise have been doing. So Rashi explains this, same way Rashi explains it in other places. Imaya Nagaru Nafach, if he was a carpenter or a blacksmith, Kama Damotel, he told him, Batel Mim Lachak Veda, he wants to not. Do this heavy type of work, and do a lighter form of work. How much of a discount in your salary would you be willing to take in order to work a little less or a little less hard? So that's the question that Rashi says. That Kubel Batel here is basically that. You compensate this individual as if, right, I mean, this is what he was making before. Now you gave him a nicer job or an easier job. So how much of a discount will you take? So that's how you pay him. Kapola batel. That discounted amount is what you compensate him for. Now, Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos says, no, you can't say kapola batel in that way because otherwise the Gemara, the continuation of the Gemara, does not read so well. It happens to be that Gemaras in other places, for instance, we had that earlier on in El Mitziot, when you find an Aveda that you get paid kapola batel. In other places, we had it in Bobakama as well, Chorot, there the Gemara reads very well according to Rashi. In that even Tosfos agrees that Rashi's explanation makes more sense in those other places. But over here, Tosfos has an issue with Rashi's reading of the Gemara, and therefore Tosfos explains here, Kabbalah Batel, says, L'kach mirela fresh, Kabbalah Batel, hainu fiyo shev uvatel the gamre. That you pay him, what would you be compensated if you would sit and do nothing? Alright? How much would be a person, right, how much would a person be willing to get compensated, right, to do nothing? Between what he would have done before and now, where he's doing absolutely nothing, what would be the amount that you would compensate him to do nothing? There happens to be a machlokas. I was showing you about exactly what Tosfos means. Right? It's not clear what Tosfos means. The Gra says that Tosfos means like this, that you pay him based on, that you don't compensate him for being a storekeeper now. You don't compensate him for being a storekeeper at all. You just compensate him for how much he's willing to give up his previous job and do nothing now. That's the way the Gra reads it. Tosfos says, you compensate him now for going from his previous job to being a zera, and you don't compensate him for being a storekeeper at all. The way is the tour, on the other hand, reads it like this, that you take him for being a storekeeper, and you ignore what he was doing before. That you don't even compare it to what he was doing before, rather just compensate him as being the storekeeper. So bother me what it means. The Rashi means that it's all relative. Everything's relative to the previous job and the current job, and then you pay him at the current job what the real salary should be, with a little discount because you saved them having to do the other work. Tosfos says, no, we don't pay attention to the previous job at all, and you just compensate him as a chenvani now, or the other way around, which the Gra seems to favor, which is that, right, you look at what he did before, you compensate him for, look, before you were doing this, if you were doing nothing, what would you get paid? You pay him that, and you ignore him being a chenvani, because the compensation for being batel. So now you make him work a little bit as a chenvani, we ignore that. That already, giving him the differential between being a blacksmith or a carpenter and doing nothing, that's enough already to classify him as being paid and compensated for what he's doing as a chenvani now. So if he has no job, then you maybe not have to, according to Rashi at least, you may not have to compensate him, right? According to the Torah, you still have to pay him as a chenvani. According to the Gra, you may not have to pay him, right? It depends on how you formulate what Poel Patel means over here. Right, but see, now, it's not always, you also have to, what's his opportunity? He also has lost opportunity. Even if he doesn't necessarily working right now, he could take a job if he has an opportunity. If he doesn't have that opportunity, then you have to question him whether you have to compensate him. Right, but tzricha. Ditana chenvani. Right, so had the Mishnah just written about the case of chenvani to segulate a poel, batel, then it would be sufficient to pay him, you know, a token amount. Yeah, the Mishnah. The Mishnah basically listed out all these different cases. List the case of chenvani, and then it goes to switch out dalim, misar, kayachim. Why did I have to repeat it? It's basically telling you the same principle that if you lend money, you have to pay the guy the salary. So it says, what does he have to do? Sit behind the counter, right? Welcome the customers in and sell what's in the store. Doesn't have to do very much. But ma'od, the kachba and payroll. We're talking about him taking the payroll, he has to drag him out to the shuk, right? And he has to set him up in the shuk. I would say that compensating him as a poel batel is not enough of a salary. They're not to compensate him at all because he's doing all this extra work. Just give him some token amount, and that would be enough to say that he's not collecting it as imputed interest on the loan. Dafilu. Effective interest on the loan. Even if he dips a vegetable with him in the brine, and he ate with him a dry fig, one dry fig, that would be enough to be a schar v'tzricha. So therefore we need both cases. That says that in both instances you have to pay him like a poel batel. Not just in one, but in any case you have to pay him a poel batel. Now, Tarabanan. Kama hu scharo, ben ruba uben mu'at. How much is this schar, right? So this, kama uskaro, what is the schar that the poet gets? Now, the says, the brisa here says, ben ruba mem buat divir rabbi meir. The mayor says, doesn't matter, a lot or a little, whatever you give him is sufficient. Right, rabbi Udomer, but you have to quantify a salary for him.
We just said, Are you talking about that case here, or just stam?
The Breitz is said independently, but the Gemara is also saying this. What is the skaro that you have to use in our Mishnah? This skaro patel that you have to pay here, what is exactly, how do we define it according to the Machlokes HaTanaim Pol, about what exactly the skaro you have to give here in order to eliminate the problem of it looking like interest?
Doesn't that contradict the earlier Gemara though?
What, kipoel patel?
Yeah.
Well, the Gemara says over here, what is the patel? Right, what is
exactly what it is.
Right, it's not so clear what a poel patel is. You'll see from here. Once we paskin, then what does it mean that Shmuel's an Amora? Shmuel has to be based on one of these Tanaim. So we have to see what the Tanaim say, and then we'll see how Shmuel fits into that.
So it really should have been, maybe this should have been
before. The price should have been before, but they brought, right, because they amended the Mishnah first, then they only brought the price later, right? Mayor says you have to fix him a salary. It doesn't matter what the salary is, but you have to fix him a salary. But it has to be some sort of salary here. Or you do a mayor who's making even more, a filo lo tabalimo elabitzir, velo achalimo elabitzirat achat zeus karo. So that's what we just saw quoted above in the Tzrichusa, right? This is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, that if you dip a vegetable in brine with him, or you eat one dried fig with him, that's a salary, you're done. As long as you give him some token salary, but not a fixed salary, but some sort of, right, nicety that you do for him, that already eliminates the problem of the salary. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai omer noten lo skoro mishlam. You gotta pay him. You gotta pay him in full. Right, that basically, which would be, right, because over here would be Koel Batel. You have to pay him his full salary that he's entitled to. So, Tan Rabbanan, Ein shemim lo et ha'izim, velo et ha'rechelim, velo kol davar she'en oseh v'ochel v'mechza. You're not allowed to set up these partnerships with, right, goats and sheep or ewes, or anything that does not, that en oseh, does not work for its own salary, doesn't provide any benefit, v'ochel and eats v'mechza. Because again, what over here, the person who's doing this is then losing out on the food that he's got to feed the animals, plus the work, the amel that he has to do for these animals. So since he has his work and his mezonot that he's outlaying, that's effective interest on the loan that he's lending him in the other 50% of the partnership. So you're not allowed to do this. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shamina Teizim, Mipnei Shechovot, Veta Rechelim, Mipnei Shegozuzot, Veshot Vot, Umor Tot, Veta Tarnagot, Mipnei Sheosev, Ochelet. Meaning that, wait a minute, that's not true. Rabbi Yossi disagrees, what seems to be disagrees over here, and says, no, you're allowed to do this with the Izim, because why? What do the Izim give? They give milk. So the milk will be compensation for the salary. In place, in lieu of a salary, or in lieu of the ochel, he will give him the milk that's produced by the aids. But fine, but at least there's a, right, there is a possibility that he will get compensated, he'll give. But generally, they give, and therefore, we assume that it's fine.
So we said what we said about pilot, we said maybe we in the field.
But here, he only has to get any amount. There, we don't care. There, we care about how much, because it's relative to a fixed amount that he's charging him. Here, he just says, whatever milk he gets, that will be his schar. Et rechelim, mipnei shegozuzot. The rechelim, why? Because you get the shearings that come off the ewes. Right, as well as shotvot, the martot, when you take them through the river, is that which the wool that washes out, or martot that scrapes up when he scrapes up against trees. The worker can collect all this wool, and he'll get some wool off the animal. Veta tarnagolet, the tarnagolet also, b'pnei osev ochelet. Why? Because the tarnagolet works for its compensated. So it eats, but it also works in the sense that it can sit on, right, it can sit on other eggs. It can create eggs, or it can, right, again, do work. So it can take that as a replacement for its, right, the lack of compensation to this individual. So where it says, V'tanakama giza v'chalav lo sape lo sapek lo skara malov zono. What's going on over here? The Tanakama, I mean, you have the same problem. The Tanakama, there is compensation here going on, which is that he's keeping these production of these animals. So why isn't his keeping of the production of the animals enough to replace what he's saying here? Where it says, V'giza v'chalav kuliyama lo pligli. Everybody agrees, but if he keeps the shearings, and if he keeps the milk, that's fine. Because that is, then he's getting his compensation, he's getting the money back, he's getting his salary back. Keep legate, when they argue about it, it's misuvie vitotre. They argue about it is when you're not giving him the milk, the milk's going to the owner of the sheep, but rather you're leaving him the misuvie. The misuvie is the water that's left over from the milk, like the part that's not the creamy part of the milk, but the water that flows to the top, if you give him that, right, the totere, and the totere are the leftover pieces of the wool. I mean, the shearings, the leftovers of the shearings. So in that case, you're not giving him full compensation, but you're giving him some little token amount. So Tanakama, Sever Laki, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. The Tanakama hope is like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, you have to compensate him, you have to pay him a full way like a poel batel. The Amar and obtain those schar abishlam to pay him his full amount. And over here, all you're giving him is some token amount of water, milk water, and leftover shearings. Rabbi Yosi Reuudas of Allah Kiavua. Rabbi Yosi, who is the son of Rabbi Yehuda, holds like his father Rabbi Yehuda. What does Rabbi Yehuda hold? Kavua, Damar, I feel a little top of Mala Bitsir. He tipped the vegetable with him in the tzir. Hello, Achali Mala Gregorta, Chabi hands him one, dried fig. Zeus Chara. So, something over here. The little milk from the little water of the milk and the little leftovers of the wool are enough to be classified as his compensation over here.
Rabbi Yosi Rabbi says, Beferish.
But the Tanakhama doesn't make any sense.
That's right.
So then he reinterprets? Yeah, exactly.
In other words, so what do we mean by chobos and gozozos?
Right.
Shotos and mortos.
No, yeah, exactly. No, or we really mean totare and isuve, basically, right?
Shotos and mortos.
Right, which is the totare of the shotos, the notrot, and by the milk would be the isuve.
And isuve.
Right, exactly. Umar has to reread it, otherwise the Tanakh doesn't make sense. When he reread it, it also rereads Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda. Alright. So now, Tanra Banan. Skerati Shalach Habrata Tarnagolet Vishnei Afruchin. A woman can rent out her chicken to sit on her friend's eggs, but for payment, fixed payment of 2 Afruchin. She gets 2 Afruchin. What? Isha Shamrala Habrata. On the other hand, a woman that says to her friend, Tarnagol Shali, Upeitzim Shalaychi. Listen, my Tarnagolet, your eggs, I'll put my chicken in, you put your eggs in, and then we'll split the chicks that hatch over here. So now, Rabbi Yehuda Matir and Rabbi Shimon Oser. Right, so Rabbi Yehuda says, no problem, and Rabbi Shimon is Oser. Now again, it's going to be the Shitatam that we saw above, but we have to explain, because the Marzin asked the first question. So in the first case, since the woman is collecting a fixed salary for the usage of her chicken, there's no problem. You rent out an item, we don't have any problem with you renting out your animals. Here you collect 2 efrochim, and you rented out your animal, that's fine. The second case, the problem is what? Where is her salary? Where is the salary for the woman who is watching over the chicken, right, who has to sit on the eggs, feed that chicken that's sitting on the eggs? Where is her salary? It's missing. Like the problems in our mission, the salary is missing. Because she's handing her the chicken, she's putting in the chicken, the other person's putting in the eggs, and she's not getting any salary for the use of her chicken. So now, if that's the case, and she has, obviously we have to say that she has downside in the eggs. If the eggs get ruined over here, there's something wrong with the eggs, then if the eggs get stolen, something happens to the eggs, she's responsible for the eggs. So the eggs are really on a loan in the sense, because she's responsible for the downside, or 50% of the downside on the eggs. So now, Rabbi Yehuda says it's okay, Rabbi Shimon says it's okay. So we're asked, Rabbi Yehuda, lo bai skara malo mizono? Where's the salary for this woman who's taking care, the one who's putting in the chicken, where's her salary? So when it says, ika beitzim zurot, there's some eggs that don't work out. In that not all eggs are effectively become chicks. Some eggs just don't make it to being chicks. And they are, right? They become scrambled eggs. So those scrambled eggs, right, become the compensation for this woman because they're not efrochim and she can keep those scrambled eggs. Now you have to say...
Sometimes you hear nothing, but even
after... So that's Tosus. Tosus says over here that it's top Tosus, which is that question. If there's nothing, then you're going to start running into the problem, right? Now it says, v'skaro v'achila, that the sharo v'achila, Rashi says the same thing here, that you're mutar to eat beitzim zurot. Beitzim zurot are like a quasi-formed chicks. They don't reach the point where they're a chick. In that place, we say in the Gemara Fulin that they're not formed enough so that they become... animals that you're eating the chick itself, but rather they're still qualified to be eaten as eggs. And then, one line down, it says, you're not going to say, well, if there are no eggs that didn't make it into chicks, you'll go empty-handed. Why? The beitzim zurot shchichei tuva. It's very common, right? So therefore, even when you don't find it, since it's so common, we're assuming that generally it's going to happen, and that's your salary. People would be willing to accept such a compensation. Forget about any loan. Say some person says, sit your chicken over here to get paid the Beitzim Zerot. Somebody would do that because it's common enough the Beitzim Zerot that that person would consider it to be a salary. It's not like, oh, it's a 50-50 shot. No, that it's so common that out of eggs, almost every batch of eggs is going to have one mizura in it. So therefore, that's enough to be classified as a salary.
Is the Beitzim Mizura worth more than dollars here in Beitzah? Because otherwise it seems like she'd be losing.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's because the Gemara says over here that the Nefesh
says, but she needs to pay for the Hefset, so isn't she losing?
No, because she didn't lose the egg. The Hefset wasn't in the egg, because that's the common, right? That's what happens to eggs that are sat on, they just won't make it. She's not responsible for the fact that the egg didn't make it. Right? She's responsible if the egg gets lost or it gets, cracked or stepped on, then she's responsible for it. But here, when the pizza is wrote, is that it just doesn't work out. So what are you going to do with it? Right? So they let her eat it. She keeps it to eat it. Now, whether it's worth less, it's because it says nefesh tova, the Gemara term, someone who eats such an egg, as a nefesh, what do they call it? Nefesh hayafeh, tochlim. So I think that's a lashon saginor, but someone who's not so particular will eat such an egg, as opposed to a regular egg where everybody would eat such an egg. All right, Tanur Banan. Makom shenagu la'alot schar katef lema'ot lebehema malin. Ve'im mishanim miminhag ha'medina. In a place where they pay compensation for carrying the item for an animal, then you have to pay it, and you're not allowed to change that situation. Now, what's the case here? The case is where he's bringing up young, or at least according to Rashi reads it, and others read it slightly differently, how to parse. The exact price over here is a little bit subject to machlokas, but just let's assume, like Rashi reads it, that the place where they bring up these young animals, when they bring up the young animals, they can't walk by themselves. So you have to carry, on your shoulder, you have to carry the animal on your shoulder. So they pay an additional salary, or they pay compensation for the fact that you put it on your shoulder. So in that case...
The only reason they had the difference between 4 or 5.
Right, very good. So now, right, if that's the minhag midah, then you have to compensate. If you create a partnership where the individual is bringing them up, you have to give them a salary for schar katef, which they normally pay to people who take care of animals in this case. Now, Rabbi Shimon Ben Omer, Shamin Egel Imimo, B'siach Imimo, B'filu Malkom Shnagu La'lot Schar Katef L'ma'ot. So Rabbi Shimon says, now wait, you can be Shamin Egel Imimo, that you can do this. If you have the mother there along with the calf, or you have the mother there along with the young donkey, then you don't have to pay him that scar. Why? Because the mother being there will cause the baby to move. Since the child always follows the mother, and since the child's following the mother, you don't have to pay him scar katef, because he's really not going to have to do that extra scar katef. My says, fine that you don't have to pay him scar katef. But schar katef is an additional salary beyond the normal work that the individual does to bring up the animals. That's his schar malo and the feed that he has to give the animals to bring them up, like in our Mishnah, or in the prices before we discussed, that you have to pay for amalo and mizono. Amalo and mizono, right, that's regular compensation. All the Gemara added was that in a place where they also pay schar katef, that additional salary, you have to pay that additional salary. And Rav Shimon Gamliel come along and say, well, you don't have to pay him anything when the mother's there. Now, all the mother did was help him with the schar katef. What happened to the core salary that's there? Where does Rabbi Shimon say? What does he do about the core salary? Rabbi says, no, that, ika galoli, he gets to keep the dung. So since he gets to keep the dung, right, that's the compensation for his core salary. Now, that's over here where Tosfos again says, pshita, the schar mizono, the alimeta, that the dung is not going to pay for the feed, it only pay for a schar malo. Right, that's the Tosfos makes that qualification over here. V'idach, right, and the Tanakhama believes, no, goli mafkuri mafkir l'hul. Dung is not, it's just not worth enough, it's not worth anything. People are normally mafkir the golim. Since they mafkir the golim, that you can't consider that to be compensation. Because he probably could have picked it up anyway, because the person's not going to keep the glau, irrespective, right, of the situation. So what to say that now, that all of a sudden the dung is his, so that's his salary? I mean, that he wouldn't have kept it in the other circumstances, so why should it be classified as the individual's salary over here? But obviously, Rav Shimon Gamliel says that all he has to do, right, is create a token salary, and the glalim will suffice as a token salary over here. So Amar Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman says, Alocha to Rav Yehuda, Alocha to Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda, Alocha to Rav Shimon Gamliel. So now if you follow this chain down, right, the Alocha is like Rav Yehuda, says that any token amount, anything that you give him is enough. Not that you have to fix the salary, you hand him a dry date, you're done. That's the salary that eliminates the problem of the salary. Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda we saw in the second Braisa, which is the Braisa that said that you're allowed to take the animals for their milk or for their shearings. But over there we qualified and said that's Nisyuve and Totere. So there, Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda is in the Shita of his father. Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda holds like Rav Yehuda his father. Right, so the halacha is like, it's probably that anything, any token amount is fine. And the last thing we just said, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Dvalim would suffice. If Dvalim suffice, he's obviously holding like Rabbi Yehuda, that any amount, any token thing that you give him is sufficient to compensate his salary. So there you have the three individuals. So that's exactly what Rabbi Nachman says. The halacha is like these three individuals.
But in that last question, why is an additional woman needed beyond the benefit of the parent animal working?
Now, the parent animal takes care of itself. You have a baby animal that's coming along with it.
Right. So
problem is with the baby animal. Because Rashi says it clearly.
Right, yeah, I see that. Clearly, that's where it went.
It's a quick question. If it's just token, why if he just gives a little more, if it does a little more than it feeds, then.
Most of the work is for that. A little bit of the work is for this.
Right. I don't know. B'nei Rav Elish, I guess you have to do per object or per unit. It has to be done. It has to be something. B'nei Rav Elish, nafek alayu haushtara, tabakidbe palga ba'agar, palga ba'hefsed. So the children of Rav Elish, they had a shtar, right, that was brought against them, that was written in it, half the profits, half the loss. So Amar Rava, Rava says, Rav Elish, gavar rabahu. Rav Elish is a big man. Bisur le'inshe lo avi safi. He would never... Right, to have such a star, we never created such a star and cause others to pay interest. Meaning that if he had agreed to such a transaction with an individual, then basically what he's doing is giving interest back to the individual. Why he's waiving no salary here. The Rav Elish was basically taking whatever produce, whatever product was, and working in it for half the profit, half the loss, which means that basically he took a loan, and that waiving his salary, he's giving him back interest. He's giving him effective interest on the loan. So the Rabbah says, Rav Elish would never enter into such an agreement because he would never allow himself to pay other people interest. It's a manav shach. So wait, either ipal Rabbah agar trade tilte beefsek. And basically, the way Rashi reads it, that the contract was written in such a manner that it was the choice of the individual, it was the choice of Rav Elish. He could decide if he wants half the profit, right? If he wants half the profit, then trade tilte beefsek. Then if he wants half the profit, that means that the owner, the original owner, takes on two-thirds of the loss. And by taking on two-thirds of the loss, that's his compensation for his salary. By taking on the additional amount of the loss above a half, that's his compensation for the salary. Or, if Rav Elish is willing to accept a half of the downside, then trade tilt to the outside, he'll get two-thirds of the upside. So either way, Rav Elish is in a better position. He gets the compensation for his salary by either taking on less of the loss or more of the profit. Now, Tosfos has, there's many gersot here. Tosfos brings three different gersot here in our Gemara. They all basically say the same thing. Because the way our Gemara is phrased over now is that the first part is saying about the, who's making the decision is about the palga of agar is of the notain, the person who gave the property over. And the second part, even palga of ahes, is talking about Rav Elish. So you're actually switching.
He gave him the option.
He gave him the option, but the subject in the decision is switching. All right, it's fine. That's what Rashi says. But Tosfos brings two other gersot that keep it consistent in the subject. Now, Bertosis also says over here, which dummy does such a transaction? How could you ever do a transaction like this? He sees that there's going to be a lot of profit. So he says, all right, you know, I'll tell you which side I want. I want half the profit side. He sees there's going to be a loss. It's not going to work out. He says, you know what? I'll take the reduced loss side. Why would anybody ever come to an agreement like this that allows someone to pick at a later date?
So he says
he doesn't pick in the beginning, but he gives him a fixed time where he has to make the decision. He says within a week, within 2 weeks, you have to make a decision before it's going to be known whether there's compensation. It's something along the lines. What you're saying to me that there's a point in time where it has to be decided what happens. So now they're reinterpreting the shtar to read this way. This is what the shtar must have meant, because Rav Elish would never have had rebates here. So I'm Rav Kana, I'm Rikla Shmatek, and made the Rav Zid Midar, though. I said over in front of me there, Barmali, Dilma Rav Elish, Tobeli Mobitzir Haba. Who says that Rav Elish didn't just get go over to his house, have a vegetable with him, have a drive date with him, and then everything's fine? So Amar Rav Nachman, and we know Rav Nachman says Allah like Rav Yehuda. So Allah is like Rav Yehuda. Why can't we say Rav Elish was going doing like Rav Yehuda? He got a little token amount from the person who gave him this, and he doesn't have to pay him a compensation or salary anymore. Why did he say that? So Amar Leit Lav Yochasay Itmar Elashita Itmar. He says, no, when Rav Nachman said Halach is like Rav Yehuda, he really was not saying that Halach is like Rav Yehuda, but rather, he was enumerating that all of them are of the same ilk or the same shita. Kulam shita achad, right? That they all have the same concept. That makes sense. Halach, halacha. If that's the case, why did Rav Nachman have to say Halach Rav Yehuda? Halach Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda? Halach Rav Shimon Gamliel? Just say like Halach Rav Yehuda, and we would have known that Halach is Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda, and Halach is Rav Shimon Gamliel, because they are all in shitas Rav Yehuda. Why is he going along and saying Halach, Halach, Halach? Right? Lema, Halach, Rav Yehuda, to make Yom Kippur. That would be it. All we'd have to say is that Rav Yehuda was the most makel over here, and then we would have known the Shita of Rav Shimon Gamliel, we would have known the Shita of Rav Yossi, Rav Yehuda. The fact that he goes and enumerates all of them indicates that he wasn't saying that Halach was this way, but rather that Kulam Shita Achat, they're all of the same right idea, or using the same Shita, which is the Shita that any minimal compensation is enough. Right, let's stop over here.